8221735. Lauren Day Baker, petitioner, appellant, versus Vienna Maria Target, respondent.
Yeah, what are you doing?
Case has been called. When you're ready to proceed, go ahead and approach. Go ahead and set up. Take as much time as you need.
May it please the court. Counsel. Good morning. My name is Tom Braun. And I'm here on behalf of Deloria Baker, who is the appellant in this matter. This case stems from an investigation that took place in 2017, wherein my client, Mr. Baker, was investigated by law enforcement for alleged sexual molestation of his biological daughter. During that investigation, social services received a referral. Social services began an investigation of its own. And in the social services investigation, the child protection team determined that a maltreatment determination was appropriate and made that finding. My client challenged the maltreatment finding from Child Protective Services, asked for reconsideration, went to an appeal, at which time the matter came out before an administrative law judge. He was still being investigated for the underlying criminal conduct at the time, so he pled his Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination during those proceedings. The administrative law judge affirmed the maltreatment finding, and then Mr. Baker's attorney did not appeal that finding to the district court, and thus it became final. The biological mother in this case, the respondent, filed a motion to modify custody.
Where are the facts? I wanted to jump you into the argument, if I could.
Yes.
Your brief argues first the issue of due process and second collateral estoppel, but I want to, you mentioned something on page 11 that I think answers this question. I want to make sure we're on the same page. It seems to me that if collateral estoppel was properly applied, the due process argument goes away. And collateral estoppel sort of incorporates the idea that you've had a full and fair opportunity, i.e. due process in the previous litigation. Therefore, the due process challenge to the second litigation doesn't exist if collateral estoppel was appropriate. Do I understand? Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that, Your Honor.
So it really comes down to collateral estoppel. One, I mean, due process is just not really necessary. If you prevail if you win on collateral estoppel, and your client doesn't prevail if you don't, and due process never has to be reached.
I think that's a fair assertion of how the two theories kind of are intertwined.
Do I correctly understand your argument that the real challenge as to collateral estoppel does not go to a full and fair opportunity? It goes to whether the issues were sufficiently identical.
Correct.
So I understand you frame, we're not looking at the ultimate issue, are we, of whether or not the modification of custody. I mean, the real issue that we're talking about for collateral estoppel purposes is the issue of the fact finding of whether sexual abuse occurred.
Correct.
So why aren't the issues identical on that specific issue, on the finding of your client's alleged abuse against the daughter?
Right. So we've got two very different processes with different objectives. So the child protection objective in making a maltreatment determination really focuses on an individual's eligibility to volunteer in schools, to be placed in positions where they may be caring for vulnerable persons, children. That maltreatment finding, someone's not entitled to counsel. If they don't challenge it on their own, the maltreatment finding essentially is made within 15 days of notice of receiving that finding.
It sounds like you're arguing the full and fair opportunity, not whether the issues are identical.
Well, yeah, and let me address that point specifically, okay? The process that the maltreatment determination uses this opportunity to object and be part of this hearing while someone's being investigated for criminal conduct, it's very likely that they would assert their Fifth Amendment privilege during that process. And by doing so, he then did not have an opportunity to be heard during that process. And the
yeah, I see. I thought that's what your argument was going to be getting to when I began reading your briefs, but it comes down to the argument that's presented to us, which is whether the issue is the same, not whether there was a full and fair opportunity to present his case. So haven't you waived that? Isn't that conceded that he had an opportunity to fully and for the purposes of this appeal?
Well, I think for I think the two are interconnected, and I think that his opportunity to be heard and the nature of the hearing in terms of what the maltreatment finding was ultimately going to affect, you know, they're very different things.
I mean, well, yeah, what happens afterwards is always different. That's why you have separate proceedings. The question is whether the finding itself is the same, whether the issue of the finding is the same in both.
Yeah.
I mean, am I wrong about that?
No, I think you're right about that. And I think that what he was attempting to do in the district court was not to say that the maltreatment finding was wrong. We understand that the maltreatment finding is binding. It's a quasi-determination.
Not the maltreatment finding, the finding that he engaged in the sexual misconduct.
Right. And
I mean, that led to the maltreatment finding, but that's not the finding, as I understand it, to which collateral estoppel is being applied.
Well, I think collateral estoppel was applied by way of motion practice to the fact that he committed sexual abuse of this minor child.
Right.
And what he was seeking at the district court level is to be able to have an opportunity to present evidence, to cross-examine individuals with respect to the credibility of that accusation, even though he, at the time of the maltreatment finding, invoked his Fifth Amendment privilege to not participate. The first prong.
Why isn't that waived? Why isn't the full and fair? I mean, I see you're trying to merge the two, but based on the briefing before us, why is the issue of a full and fair opportunity to be heard waived?
Well, I think that it really relates to, you know, prong one of collateral estoppel, and the issue must be identical to the one of the prior adjudication. That's really what this comes
down to. Well, let's just ask, what exactly is the issue then that you think that we're talking about?
The issue that we're talking about is whether he committed sexual abuse of his daughter.
Okay, so isn't that the same issue in both cases?
It's the sole issue in the maltreatment determination. That's the only issue that the administrative law judge was there to find. Under the best interest factors, whether he committed sexual abuse of his daughter is one fact that the court should consider when looking at 518.17 in making a determination as to whether custody is appropriate, parenting time is appropriate. So how he frames that issue, how he talks about it, what happened, when it took place, the age of the child, all of these things are important for the court to consider when making a determination about custody and parenting time. So foreclosing him from talking about it at all and just using the maltreatment finding to basically issue what's tantamount to a summary judgment in favor of the respondent in this case precludes him from being able to have a fair opportunity at the evidentiary hearing in the family court case to argue for custody and parenting time, even supervised parenting time.
You keep going back to full and fair opportunity, and I must be missing something as to how you go from the issue, the identical nature of the issue, to the other factor in collateral estoppel, which is a full and fair opportunity to be heard. And forgive me if I'm missing how those dots are connected. If you'd like to give it another run.
Yeah. So I think that, When you look at the court's ultimate job in the family court, which is to determine best interests, and we've got this maltreatment finding, and the court's made a determination, or the administrative law judge has made a determination that sexual assault has in fact occurred. And it did so at, you know, its pretrial order, which was just, you know, days before the trial, and ruled in its pretrial order dated March 7th, 2022, that there was going to be, you know, no testimony on this issue. It's at that hearing that he's now not having a fair and full opportunity to be heard, despite the fact that we have a maltreatment finding and there's sexual abuse, he accepts that that is the administrative law judge's determination. The bigger issue on appeals is now, what do we do with it? And the district court said, we're not going to hear any testimony about it. I'm not going to.
But wouldn't he? I appreciate the dialogue going on, but and I guess we shouldn't wonder, but I would assume that he would also invoke his Fifth Amendment during any child custody proceedings for the same reason. Charges can emerge.
Well, I think he was prepared to testify in this case about the facts and circumstances surrounding the allegation in the case, which was related to DNA being found on an undergarment of the child. Now, that's the only factor that was present in the maltreatment case, and we weren't trying to relitigate that issue.
Well, then why would his testimony be necessary if the finding of the sexual assault occurred? Why would it matter for him to testify in the second case as to whether sexual assault occurred?
Because if sexual assault occurred, it's not necessarily an automatic that there would be no unsupervised parenting time. No.
Well, the district court allowed that. The district court said parties are free to talk about the other things that are, you know, whether it's in the best interest of the child, notwithstanding the fact that there was sexual assault. Parents often get to maintain their relationship with their children, right, even after terrible circumstances like that,
right,
and misconduct like that. The district court allowed the testimony. Am I correct? The district court allowed other testimony, just not the one limited thing neither side was allowed to testify about or provide evidence about was whether sexual assault had occurred.
Right. So after the court made that determination that res judicata applied and precluded any testimony from that, the appellant sought a continuance because at that point, the dynamic of the trial had changed completely. Right. And he sought the ability to retain an expert to do a psychosexual evaluation, to provide information to the court relative to propensity to commit abuse and develop a record. That was denied, that request for continuance. So he was left having to defend a case wherein he couldn't talk about the ultimate issue. He couldn't present evidence related to what his relationship was like with a minor child right after or in near proximity to the alleged abuse, because the court was essentially saying, we're not going to talk about the abuse.
Right. I mean, that's the consequence of collateral estoppel. But the argument now has to be whether that determination of collateral estoppel was appropriate or inappropriate, not whether the effect of it was appropriate or inappropriate.
Correct. And to apply collateral estoppel in this kind of a case, to preclude a parent from being able to get on the stand and talk about the facts associated with the history of parenting and that child, is so grave. I mean, this is essentially a TPR, you know, for Mr. Baker. And I think the case law is pretty clear that collateral estoppel should be used in cases that where it's not used offensively. And that's exactly what's happening to Mr. Baker here. By applying collateral estoppel and precluding him from having his day in court, from being able to testify about the relationship that he had at that time and to testify about the facts attenuant to this sexual assault, is essentially precluding him from having a relationship with his daughter. And what does the court gain by doing that? I mean, I guess it saves time and testimony from having to, you know, hear what would be very difficult facts in this case. But what it gives up is it precludes an individual from having an opportunity to be heard, which is one of the fundamental rights in this process, especially as it relates to a constitutional right to parent, which every parent enjoys. So in applying collateral estoppel in the manner that it has, and you know, the case law talks about how collateral estoppel should be, you know, used on a, you know, sparingly. The LJB case that we cited, when, you know, collateral estoppel violates notions of fundamental fairness, that the court should, you know, essentially be very cautious in applying an estoppel doctrine like this to essentially change the nature and scope of the trial, which is exactly what happened here.
But if you've conceded that he had a full and fair opportunity to be heard in the first proceeding, how is fundamental fairness implicated?
Well, but I think that when you look at an individual's participation in a maltreatment case, their motivations are very different than what they may be in a custody case. And especially with a pending criminal charge that's, you know, maybe hanging over his head, there's a lot of reasons why an individual would not want to testify and rely on a record. When you have the custody of a minor child at issue and parenting time and access to information at stake, motivations are very different. So an individual's want or desire to participate changes. And I think that that really fundamentally is the distinction here. Because he's essentially now lost legal and physical custody, has no road back for even supervised parenting time, absent a change of circumstances, hard to imagine what that could be given his inability to have essentially any contact with a minor child, forecloses his ability to have a meaningful relationship with his daughter. And to have a hearing on the merits of this matter is essentially what the appellant is asking for, which is why we're seeking reversal of the district court's determination. Thank you.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Kenneth White, and I'm an attorney from Mankato, Minnesota, and I represent respondent mother in this action. As the court has developed the argument, I think that this case really does come down to the single issue of collateral estoppel and whether it was properly applied by the district court. In doing so, it's important to understand the nature of collateral estoppel. Collateral estoppel is an evidentiary tool that the district courts use to determine a particular fact, not an entire cause of action or entire dispute between the parties, unless that particular fact is ultimately dispositive. Here, the particular fact in dispute was, did father sexually abuse his daughter? The DHS answered that question, yes. The district court said, father, you're not objecting in any way to the procedures that DHS followed. You're not claiming you had some violation of your rights in the DHS proceedings. And in fact, probably could not have successfully done so. The appellate courts of Minnesota, this court and the Supreme Court having repeatedly held, and the Eighth Circuit even having repeatedly held that the Minnesota Administrative Procedures Act comports with due process. And so the district court said, as to that one individual fact, I'm not going to hear any testimony. I'm going to find it's a matter of collateral estoppel that father sexually abused daughter. That does not preclude the parties from discussing any of the remaining factors related to the custody and parenting time issues in the statutory framework that we get from the legislature. Two critical pieces to this in terms of the record that I think the court needs to recall. First, father was asked the question, did you sexually abuse your child? He took the Fifth Amendment. So he had the opportunity, apparently, when asked the question, to say no. He did not take that opportunity. He took the Fifth Amendment. In addition, counsel suggests that there was this dramatic change in the testimony as a result of this singular factual finding, and that it precluded father from discussing a lot about the prior relationship. The record demonstrates that, in fact, father had plenty of opportunity to do that. In the transcript at pages 139 to 140, father talks about his relationship with his daughter prior to the alleged sexual abuse, or what the district court found to have been a time period when the sexual abuse occurred. Father is then allowed to testify further about it and does so at page 144 of the transcript. At pages 146 and 147 and 155 and 157 to 58, father talks about his future intentions if he is granted parenting time and or some kind of custody relationship with his daughter. His girlfriend was allowed to testify about their prior activities. and attempted to provide an alibi for him about the alleged sexual abuse and was allowed to testify about their relationship. All of that testimony went in, and the district court went through all of the factors that the legislature says the district court is to consider and made a determination, given all of that evidence, that the parties have the opportunity to present. Any claim that father did not have a full and fair opportunity to present evidence at the district court simply does not flow from the record in this case, other than that one singular issue, which leads us back to collateral estoppel.
Do you see that as an argument that we need to address on appeal, whether father had a full and fair opportunity?
I believe, Your Honor, it was waived, given the nature of the briefing in this case and the way the brief is structured. Father continues to raise it here, and then the colloquy with the court every time the question came up about the issue, there was reference to either the procedures at the DHS or the procedures at the district court. I don't think that's a preserved issue, but certainly the court could address it. But I think even any kind of careful review of the record will demonstrate that, in fact, the district court did the right thing and that any procedural deficiencies claimed now were waived. Counsel also makes the argument that this is the equivalent of a TPR, or termination of parental rights. There is no termination language in here. And in fact, the court invites father to come back if circumstances change. The expert in this case, Dr. Chawla, was testified about the steps that father and daughter need to take in order to restore a relationship. The first step of that being father acknowledging that something went wrong. And father has been unwilling to do that to date. So I think, Your Honor, any claim of any kind of procedural deficiency here or the equivalent of a termination of parental rights is simply not supported by the record that exists in this case. As the court noted, the primary issue here is what is the issue that to which collateral estoppel was applied. It's a very simple, narrow, single issue. Did father sexually abuse his daughter? DHS answered yes to that question. Counsel has acknowledged that that was a final determination. The district court said you had your opportunity to litigate that question. You don't get two bites at the proverbial apple. And so I'm going to apply collateral estoppel to that one single narrow issue. As a result of that, all of the testimony mother was prepared to testify, BCA experts and everybody else were lined up with subpoenas to testify. None of that evidence was admitted. And yet they're scattered throughout the record, if you read the transcript, scattered throughout the record are references to the sexual abuse happening and time frames and whether father was alone with daughter and all the rest of that. So it was not as absolute a prohibition as one might typically see in a collateral estoppel circumstance. But
well, it was absolute in the sense, I mean, there was some testimony that came in about the abuse, but there was no testimony that would call into question the fact of the sexual abuse.
Other than the testimony of the girlfriend about how they timed caring for daughter during the weekend when the incident occurred. And father being asked the question, did you sexually abuse your daughter? And answering, I take the fifth. Beyond that, you're correct, Your Honor. There was no specific reference to this case. There's no discussion of the DNA in the underwear, all the rest during the hearing process. So, Your Honor, I think the record here is more than sufficient to support the district court determination, given the Graham standards for what the district court and the appellate courts are to look at in deciding whether to apply collateral estoppel, that the district court did not err in applying collateral estoppel. Recognize that you've got this split kind of standard of review, there is the question of law, is it possible to apply collateral estoppel? And then the district court has the discretion to apply it. So the district court could have said, yes, I think collateral estoppel may apply, but I'm not going to do it. Bring on all the testimony. District court chose in its discretion not to do that. The district court has that discretion. But given all of that, Your Honors, unless the court has further questions, we would simply ask the court to affirm the decision here leave it to the parties in the future to go back to district court if there is some sort of change in circumstances that would warrant it.
Thank you, Mr. White. Mr. Brown, you have the last word.
If the court examines the findings of fact, conclusions of law, and order for judgment from the district court, and you look at the best interest factors, present in almost every single factor is the existence of the sexual abuse, and that the court found through collateral estoppel that Mr. Baker sexually abused a minor child in this case. And on page 18 of our brief, we talk about the second argument against offensive use of collateral estoppel is that it may be unfair to a defendant. This is the single most controlling fact in this case, whether there was sexual abuse to this minor child. And Dr. Chawla talked about the trauma and the effects of it, and that became a significant source of inquiry from the court. But I do see that the way these issues line up are very similar to that of the cases cited by us, Berner versus British Commonwealth Pacific Airlines, the Evergreens versus Noonan, where defendants don't appeal a judgment of a minor amount of money because it's just simply a determination that they make at the time, but then later gets sued for millions of dollars and the court declines to impose collateral estoppel. And I think that how individuals may view maltreatment findings, because the consequence may not be important to the individual. Having a maltreatment finding doesn't oftentimes preclude people from obtaining work, having sometimes, even relationships with their children. They don't have an understanding necessarily of what that process even means or oftentimes even participate in it. So the precedent that would get set by this court by allowing collateral estoppel to be applied is that anyone with a maltreatment finding, it is automatically, essentially, within the discretion of the court to apply that finding in a family court matters, which is then dispositive almost entirely of issues of custody and parenting time. I think that that's a very dangerous precedent to set. I think it's inconsistent with fundamental fairness and the right to be heard. And when collateral estoppel is used in an offensive way, which it is here, because it precluded his ability to have a trial on that issue, and you see how important it is in the findings. That the court ultimately makes its determination really based solely on that fact. That then denies the appellant an opportunity for a fair hearing because I think that the two are not congruent, the maltreatment process and the family court process by which you have to evaluate the best interest factors under the statutory framework as set forth by the legislature. So we're asking for reversal based on those reasons. And if the court doesn't have any other questions, I will succeed with the rest of my time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you again to both attorneys for appearing today. The matter is submitted and a decision will be issued in the statutory timeframe.
Thank you.